Welcome to Thunder Junction.
Welcome to Thunder Junction.
You know what? I like this intro. Let's go with that. Hi, everyone. I'm Brady Magpie here for an interesting, exciting, all the things, all the verbs.
Yeah, we're here to call out wizards as always, because now I'm Tanner Cherry. we'll start off with, I guess we're criminals and outlaws now.
Yep.
Rogues are officially classified in the canon as criminals because you commit crimes.
We are effectively in all ways and definitions of it absolutely destined for jail.
Jail time, yes. And we also have one more jailbird with us today as well.
Mm. Hello, hello. I'm Oz from the Wonderful Wizard of Oz. And we're here to be talking about some Thunder Junction.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's been hilarious, like watching all the YouTube and podcast content of people just getting in it with the saddle up, man. The mechanics,
yeehaw.
Does this not feel like those of Thunder Junction? Does it not feel like an unset? Like they could have been silver bordered back 10 years ago. This would have never flown, right?
No, this is the we struck gold with potential set, and I'm excited. No, literally, like the amount of legendaries and even commons out there are insane. I think all formats are going to receive some kind of real dusty, cracked out boost here real soon. I don't know, like it's gonna be bad.
I actually have something to say about the legendary comment. Funny thing about this set is that apparently they broke the record for the amount of legendary creatures in a standard set.
Oh really?
And I'm talking like they beat out Dominaria.
Yeah, that's
the one that was like focused around legendary creatures, where there was one in every booster pack. Or I guess there was a legendary permanent. Or not even a legendary permanent. Sorry, there was the legendary instance and sorceries too. So there was a legendary card in every pack.
The way that I was thinking about it earlier was that this is Commander Legends for villains.
It's Super Smash Bros. Is what it is.
Yeah, Super Smash Bros.
Seriously, like, you know how like every Super Smash Bros. Game, like the available characters to choose, just like it keeps encompassing more and more
I
games.
Love that
and
rows analogy. And
yeah,
rows.
I'll give credit to Loading Ready Run for that analogy. That was where I heard it. But it is. It feels like Super Smash Bros. It's just all the greatest hits.
All the greatest hits. Well, like what? Like even just to start this off, we have Vian Goldwaker. So this is from one of the pre-cons. Other outlaws you control have vigilance and haste. Assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks are considered outlaws.
So apparently we're outlaws.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And at the beginning of combat on your turn, you may have treasures you control become 3/3 construct assassin artifact creatures in addition to their other types until the end of the turn. Can I please just go die and happily
wait,
now? Like,
wait,
this is
wait.
Insane.
Mardu is red is a great treasure color, right? Like
Mardu loves gold already. Yeah. Not Jund. Jund and Mardu, I think, have the gambit on that. For sure, but this is insane. This is every possible means to make treasure go burr.
What do you think about this, Oz?
I mean, it's crazy. Honestly, one of the things that I like most about it, and it's a little odd, is that they've added almost like a subtype or a super subtype to it, because you've got the
construct assassin.
Yeah, well, no, it's the because assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks are considered now outlaws. So you've got the so you've got dwarf warlock, but it's also an outlaw, and so you've got this. It's this kind of hazy gray area of this is a super subtype that we can kind of wedge in there, and honestly, it's super cool to see what they can do with these cards to add in more. Even without throwing it on there.
I'm going to make a prediction right now that they're going to do the same thing for ginormous sea monsters. You know, like we've seen a number of legendaries over the years that focus on everything except for whales and octopi.
Or krakens. Yeah.
Right. They started a trend, and I don't know if they're... Well, so they'll have to make something like outlaws for sea monsters, creatures.
Just sea monsters, probably.
From the deep.
Something.
So I want to point out the fact that this guy, he creates 3/3 construct assassin artifact creature tokens, so they get this buff that he's giving.
You may.
So they will have vigilance and haste, which is kind of cool because you can beat your opponent in the face with 3/3 treasures and then sack them for mana in post combat because they had vigilance. And
Malik Grim Manipulator would love to be in the 99, if not have this in the 99. This would be insane.
I mean, also it's really cool to see the animating artifacts not in blue.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
But also not surprising to see it in Mardu.
Yeah. Doing I mean, treasures stuff. Are the baseline for... I think that Mardu definitely takes the cake even further than... Well, I mean, yeah, you got the Jund, but it's cool to see that that animation for artifacts
that is
not in the baseline colors. I love breaking the color pie.
And just to hammer a freaking nail in the coffin here, it only costs 3 mana exact to summon.
Red, white, and black.
Yeah.
3 mana, 3/3. Okay, we dove right into the card spoilers. There's a couple like things that I want to talk about this set. Just right off the rip. Another Wizards fail. And I love Wizards of the Coast. I still buy your products. I guess. Yeah.
I guess.
But we gotta point out something that happened here that I don't know why. They didn't bother telling anybody that this is the 100th standard Magic set. Why are they not celebrating that? It was the 100th set.
That is a fail.
And they didn't say a fucking word.
That's a big number.
There's a lot of people being like, hey, like,
throwing it under the carpet
should be like celebrated, and they haven't been saying anything so far. And like, we're a couple weeks from release. They're not marketing the fact that it's the 100th standard set, which is sort of weird. Like, that's a huge milestone, and you blowing right past it.
I'm glad you accumulate this knowledge, because this is weird. Like,
you would think that would be something. Like, do you think that they're holding on to that to like throw it in for something else, or
God, I wish
it wouldn't make any sense though.
They did it. What was that one? They made it all those legal semi-legal proxies of all.
Oh,
those.
Magic 30.
Yeah. Like Magic 30. Was that their celebrate? Like,
well, that
like
was
we already did that. We're not gonna also on top of everything else we're doing gonna celebrate our 100th set.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the from the information, maybe my sources are wrong. Maybe the next set is the 100th set and they'll talk about it. I don't know.
Maybe they're celebrating with Thunder Junction. You know what? There's the thought there. This is the gold line, right? This is like, weehaw, let's go to the plains unattested and try to conquer some booty with gold.
There's so much about this set that I want to talk about. Not only cards, but like... There's also the whole thing to get into. I don't know, you want to do spoilers first and then get into the deep weeds on the stuff? Because, like, yeah, I think we already started with spoilers. I'm interrupting with the friggin' news.
We jumped right into it.
Here
we got Felix Five Boots, who is probably the most adorable and possibly sexiest slime in Magic.
Ooze Rouge?
Yeah. Rouge, Rouge, Menace, Ward 2. There's a lot of limbs there. Maybe that's what it's doing for me. I don't know. And the boots. I love boots. Anyways, if a creature you control dealing combat damage to a player causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. Can we get an amen up in this bitch? That is terrifying. This is going to get Yarik, the Desecrated fans, just in a tizzy. Any Panormonicon fan at all is going to lose their nuts. This is pretty big deal.
I haven't seen this card until right now. That's quite interesting. 5 mana, 5/4. Menace, Ward 2.
Thoughts on the sex appeal, though? big ask.
Yeah. You know...
Would you fuck?
I didn't have a romance with... what was that stuff called? That slime that you could buy when you were young?
Oh,
is this a thing, man, that...
Oobleck or whatever?
You never had a romance?
Remember Gak?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there some like weird... Is this a thing that... Okay, we're talking about...
People into Gak.
Spoilers. Yeah, people into Gak? Oh, to each his own, whatever, you know? People ate Tide Pods back in the day.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
it was like basically yesterday.
What do you think, boys? What do you think? Felix Five Boots.
It's been said before, just to reiterate, when you put a Panharmonicon thing on something, it just automatically makes it go burr.
It's just crazy. I have a question. Is it, at this point in 2024... Is it lazy, I guess, just to design a creature with like, hey, this thing just happens twice? Is that kind of like, I think it sells packs. Like, you know, Mondrak is a house,
I think,
you know?
This is a bar that Wizards has been kind of waiting for to pass for a little while, because the power creep keeps going just a little bit, just a little bit, just a little bit. And now we've actually gotten to a point where this isn't overpowerful. This isn't going to run away with the game.
Well, yeah, again, like I was saying, Yarik the Desecrated, the same, I think it's 6 mana to summon Yarik, correct me if I'm wrong there, but otherwise still similar mana cost at 5 in Sultai. Mm-hmm. I think the big exception here is Menace in Ward 2 is kind of a go go fuck yourself a little bit. But yeah, aside from that, yeah, no matter what, we're going to be seeing with some of the other reveals coming up here, more Panel Monica based abilities, and yeah, it's going to get nutter. Especially, I think I'm gonna let someone else cover Obeka.
Oh boy!
Yeah, I'll let you rant.
There's many cards in the set that I like. Obeka is the one that it's kind of rare for me. Brady, you're much more of the like fervent deck builder. Like you see like every card and you're like, I want to build this immediately. Not every card, right? But like the good cards, there's a dozen cards in this set that you would just build tomorrow if you could.
Most of the rogues one. Anyone that's specifying outlaws right now, I'm gonna let you know. I've already been looking at the bulk of my brews and like, how many of my decks can I replace with a rogue? I'm not lying.
But yeah, like for me, I'm like, I think I've tempered my expectations and like calmed myself down. Like, really, it came down to like, you know, breeding. Really, having a child was like, I actually can't buy a box of this set this month, right? And so I'm not going to buy a box to draft. And then after like buying, you know, six sets go by and you're like, I'm not buying any of it. You just get used to like, I don't have to buy cards from every set. And then, I mean, like, this is kind of like a depressing rant, but it's like, I used to love buying just like a box of every set and inviting people over to draft. But I've gotten to the point now where like, It takes a little bit more for me to be like, okay, I'm going to go through the motions of actually buying all these cards and build this deck. And Obeka, Splitter of Seconds, has me feeling things. I am tingling.
Terrifying.
Tingling. It is a legendary creature, Ogre Warlock. Warlocks are outlaws.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I guess,
otherworldly patrons.
Which is, that makes sense. Yeah, and the way that they've been depicted, at least in Dungeons & Dragons and such. That kind of makes sense.
This card, the Obeka first showed up in Commander Legends as the, I believe it was had a tap ability to end the turn.
Sendal of the Infinite ability on a stick.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was kind of cool. I don't know if that card really ever like went crazy. Like there was a lot of theorizing.
There's a lot of, honestly, Sendal of the Infinite abilities before, and I'm sure now it's not going to be too much to sneeze at going forward, frankly. But anything that could have done that even a couple of years ago compared to what we're seeing now would have been considered, I think, really, really strong.
Yeah.
And it could create 100 million elementals that get exiled at end step. Well, guess what? They stay. You know, like, you had to time it right, but aside from that, a lot of ways to break.
Right, yeah, it worked like that. Like, Obeka, I think it's cleaner, and I like the fact... I'll read the card. It's one generic, blue, black, red. So it's a 4-mana Grixis commander, 2/5 menace. Whenever she deals combat damage to a player, you get that many additional upkeep steps after this phase.
They had to make that a 2/5. So,
yeah, 2/5.
Menace.
You obviously have to do something to make sure that this creature gets through. But when it does, you're getting a minimum of 2 extra upkeep steps, which, I mean, there's... right away, like, I saw people talking about all of the court cards, the Court of Ire, Court of Ambition, Court of Ventress... right. Ooh. All of these things that are, they kind of have like the shrine thing. The shrines all do a thing on the upkeep, but the shrines sort of depend on the amount of shrines, whereas the courts, they just like have a banger trigger, and if you're the monarch, you get the better one. And what happens right after you deal combat damage? You become the monarch. So every court with monarch, you just get like these crazy haymaker things 2 times every time you, and if you manage to buff her
court
up at all.
Court of Ambition is going to jump in price. Oh my goodness.
This is what I'm so excited for all of these cards. It's basically going to be a very board state deck, right? And you just want to get Obeka, like, fire it up, send it in. Let's say you connect for 5. You can end the game with 3 or 4 of your permanents that are out on the battlefield draining and doing life. Like, the red court like deals 7 to any target?
It's 7 to, yeah, 7 to anything. Otherwise, I think it's just a lightning bolt or maybe 2 damage.
Yeah, but you will have the monarch. if you trigger her ability, you will gain the monarch, and then you get all of the monarch triggers.
That's tasteful.
So all of those, like, and there's a lot of other cards that work in that regard.
As Foretold, amazing, yes, right?
As Foretold, there's also, as a mana rock, I think is it Replicating Ring?
Oh yeah,
on your upkeep, put a counter on it. Well, what if you put 3 every combat, and then all of a sudden it just becomes 8 more?
Rude. I'm honestly thinking about putting this into the 99 for an Essica. I mean, that's just nasty.
This card's nuts.
Oh yeah,
I'm excited. Also, I honestly, regardless of some of the other spoilers, I think this might be some of the most standout art in the new set.
Yeah.
This is
looking fly.
This is spectacular. The broken glass panel. Oh man, with the bad ass empowered bitch moment with the fists. Oh, and the hair. Oh.
Yeah, and there's a full art like borderless version that I will be seeking immediately.
That flavor text, you're living on borrowed time. Oh my yep. Lord.
Yeah.
So sell me more.
Give me a month. I'll put this deck together. I'm actually excited to put a deck together a lot, and also the Fallout. Liberty Prime, Dr. Yeah, Madison yeah, yeah. Lee. I really want to get that thing tuned up. I'm feeling deck buildy, so
yeah,
keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, we're gonna be around for that for some weird deck building episodes. So coming forward.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll let you guys in on that process. I want to do that on camera and right, make an episode.
What
of
we
it.
Got here? We have. Oh, you can take this one away.
Ooh.
Everyone's freaking out over this, and I have my 2 cents on it.
I actually don't think it is as powerful as everybody's saying. I mean, I get it. The ward one.
It's not Golas.
All right, name the card. Read it.
So it's loot key to everything. It's a teamer. And
teamer mana three
teamer
mana.
For a 1/2. So 3 for a 1/2 and ward one. I mean, it's, and at the beginning of your upkeep, exile top X cards of your library, where X is the number of card types among non-land permanents you control. You may play those cards this turn. So it just gives you the ability to play things for that turn. But I mean, if you can't play them, they're gone. They're exiled.
What is this? Reverse Delirium, kind of.
It's technically labeled Impulsive Draw.
Yeah.
It's a red ability where you can draw extra cards in the turn. You can see more cards, but you have to play them right away. Impulsive Draw has gotten better in the past couple years. They've actually started to make it, like, for instance, Expressive Iteration is nuts because you can play them until the next end of your next turn. Or...
Expressive Iteration, that's the Azet one? No. You're thinking, like, Commune with Lava does that. It's an X-cast one where you exile top X cards of your library. Sorry, the fucking...
I actually have my promo Expressive Iteration right here. Look at the top three cards of your library, put one of them into your hand, put one of them onto the bottom of your library, and exile one of them. You may play the exile card this turn. Okay, so I was wrong about that.
It's Impulse Draw with a lot of steps,
yeah.
But it's basically kind of... I would say it's close.
So long as you can play the land, it's basically 2 mana, draw 3 cards.
It's like a brainstorm on top of an impulse draw ability and a bunch of and a bottom of the and a scry. But you know, either way, I see this as reverse delirium. It's checking for things that are existing on the board state. It's giving you X chances to do so, and you gotta pray that your ward one will actually keep this thing around if you want to build this aggressively. I remember when Golas was a first hit. Like tables, it was probably one of the most disgusting thing. There was no weird chill way to do it unless you were literally creating jank. Like, oh, I'm just gonna create flavor text creatures. Good for you. That's not how you build it, and that's never what I experienced. And when I see this, I think the exception obviously being the mana restrictions to it. It's not Wooburg. We're playing in Temur. It wins in all the other ways. Whereas Golas has a bit of sex appeal. We have Lute, who Prey does not. And
and I don't want to get it wrong because yes, it is powerful. It has its place, but
thanks
at the same
it back
time,
in the right direction.
at the same time, it's just for the power level of things that we have out there. I don't think it's worth throwing up arms about.
So what I want to say is that I think that it's maybe not as impactful in regular Commander, but I believe that in CEDH it's going to be nuts.
That's fair.
Now, the reason I say that is because A, it's cheap. It's 3 mana. Like, one of the decks that you hear about a lot in CEDH is Timna and Krom, right? You've got two partner commanders. Krom is a 5-drop that essentially whenever an opponent casts his or her second spell each turn, draw a card. It's an Izzet. Timna is a 3-drop in Orzhov, so you're enabling the 4 colors with this partner, which is really good. At the beginning of your post-combat main phase, you may pay X life where X is the number of opponents that were dealt combat damage this turn if you do draw a card. These creatures are in the command zone only to A, enable colors, and B, give you looking at extra cards. Now, that's why I think that loot might be worthy, because Timna is a 3-drop, but it requires other kind of things, right? You have to, like, get... Like, you have to get in for damage here and there. This card literally, let's say you play loot on three and you've already got a Mana Crypt or some sort of, you know, let's say you've got your Soul Ring out and you've got a Rhystic Study. You've got three of the things there, right? Every single turn, you start your turn seeing another three cards. And in CEDH, those cards are so effing cheap. You just need to see them. You just need to have access to them. I do think that, like, I don't know. Like, the fact that it's missing black might be the only down... Like, not, I'm not a CEDH expert. I listen to a lot of people babble about it, right? Mm. And I feel like when I saw this, I was like, man, this card seems like it would be incredible.
My biggest concerns with it is, and I understand where it can be placed competitively, but as someone who especially has been winning recently with like post-combat triggers, I think at the beginning of your upkeep, in which you have very a finite window in which to pray you have open mana immediately, to do anything, you know? And I feel like there's just a lot of ways in which the spookier this gets and the player not playing rule zero, playing something that's broken, who wants to play casually with somebody, is regardless going to get nemesis immediately if they're doing too much. I think that's one of the mentalities I have.
You think it's going to draw too much ire?
Too much ire in some ways, but at the same time, no. I don't know. I think there's restrictions. At the beginning of upkeep, I think is weaker than any other stage that it could be triggered at. End step gives you an entire state, like multiple stages to plan and set things up.
I would,
including keeping mana open and post combat main phase, which I think is pretty outstanding for a lot of other reasons, because you get to finish off a combat trigger or the damage, you know, the attrition after combat, all that kind of stuff. So at the beginning of upkeep, I feel when I had a competitive Florian build, which is a at post-combat main phase, you basically scry X, where X is the total amount of damage dealt to all opponents, so kind of like Neheb. Mm-hmm. And then you exile, you impulse draw any one of those cards. And I just felt so restricted, weirdly enough, actually, by the post-combat trigger for this card, because at the end of the day, people knew what I was setting up to do. So I think if anyone's going to use their brain, they're going to wait for your beginning of your upkeep, and then just spells are going to fly. And outside of the exception of CDH being like, if anyone else doesn't know how to plan around that, that's whatever. But even I think casually it's still going to make people upset.
I want to draw way back, because you said a minute ago that it's more powerful to have it in your end step.
I think there are more powerful end step triggers you've had more time to plan.
Well, I'm talking about this trigger, because this trigger suck if it was
the way
in
I started that was, I think the beginning of upkeep is weaker, because you have to plan
weaker
that.
Than what?
And you also have to survive turns before your upkeep.
I would disagree. You're looking at cards to use for your turn. Wouldn't you want to see them at the beginning of your turn? Why would you want to see them at the end?
Well, unless you just bypass your command, your combat, and your second main phase, and you just keep all your mana open for defense.
Okay.
The stronger your deck is built around this, people are going to have their responses for something that revolves around your beginning.
Okay, so any creature you put in your deck that has haste, any creature in general, you lose the axe. If you draw that with this trigger, you don't get to play it. If you're past combat, let's say you draw a dragon with haste.
Yeah, avoid mirror.
You don't get to go to combat. Yeah. Like, you no, I think this combat this trigger has to be in your upkeep. It has to be at the start of your turn, because then you see three more cards to do with. So how about this? Do you think Sensei's Divining Top is a bad card?
Absolutely. Yeah.
honest question.
Top three strongest artifacts.
Isn't it sick to be able to see three more cards and pick which ones we're gonna play?
Yep.
So this is.
But that's at
that
any point.
Every turn.
You can do that almost at any point, and this is only at the beginning of your upkeep. Assuming that you survived a rotation of turns.
Yeah.
I don't understand what you're saying. At the beginning of your upkeep, put three of the cards from the top of your deck in your hand, and then you can play them this turn.
Yeah, but you have to cast mana for that.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
So
if you put good cards in your deck, don't you want to see them and cast them?
Yeah,
I think the way to build this is to make it low mana. You want to make it a low mana cost so that you can actually play them out. Either that, or I would say throw in something like a Joyra in there, so that when you do pick up something that's heavy, heavy mana cost, two mana, throw it into exile with some suspend, so that you don't lose it.
I can just see this card being shut down too often, especially when it only costs three mana. People are going to be way more unaffected by removing it right away, even casually.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, it's three mana. That's fine. You can suffer the mana. It doesn't matter. You know, like, I think that the bigger the cost, the more setup, the more defense is going behind the cost of the commander. I really do struggle with the beginning of upkeep. I do understand exile the top X card at the beginning of upkeep, untap upkeep. So you have untap to deal with things. You have your upkeep. You get, and it depends on your board state. At the end of the day, all it takes is permanent removal, and I think this deck, just this commander loses a bit of traction. I think it's amazing with the right setup in a 99 if you get it as a combo piece for some things.
Can I interject there? Every single card ever printed is subject to those same criticisms. I don't feel like that's a knock. It could just be this.
Well, it could just be a matter of perception then, in terms of how I like to build and where how I deal with commanders when they're out.
How I would build around to defend against this, I would make something that plays stuff from exile.
Yeah, totally.
Oblivion Sower or something like that. When somebody
Void
exiles
to
their stuff.
Jump up in price. Actually, Void Mirror might actually jump up in price now.
What is Void Mirror?
I don't think it's you may play them this turn. You may put those exile into your. So Void Mirror is.
Whenever a player casts a spell, if no colored mana was spent to cast it, counter it.
Not what I'm thinking. There's another one. It's if a spell would be cast from anywhere but their hand, counter it. That's the one I'm thinking.
Ah, yeah.
Which is not against no.
Dampening Sphere?
Is that it?
No. Dampening Sphere is for mana.
That's the mana type.
If you add more than one mana, then you get. Then it becomes colorless.
The card's on screen here. We just can't friggin' remember it right now.
But yeah, either way, no. I think it's just a matter of, principally, I need to see it in play to have a much more thorough... Because I don't think there's never been a commander like this, right? So until I actively see it pop off and do some cool shit, I think I'll have a better opinion.
Yeah, I think, like, Teemer... green isn't really, like, the favorite color of CEDH right now. From what I've heard, it's not really... Like, it has... its uses, but I think Grixis is kind of where you want to be.
I like green.
Salus Wren and what's the big one now? Salus Wren and Rogue-Rax. So I can see where that's kind of going.
Yeah. Anyway, loot, key to everything, really cool piece of the story.
Super cute. And I mean, card draw wins games, and so you have it on your commander, never a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I if there's two cards, I guess we talked about them back-to-back, Obeka and loot are... the ones getting me.
Honestly, the five foot Rogues. The more what that I've it? Been thinking about it, the Rogues, the five boots.
Oh right, yeah, the there was one you showed just a little.
Five boots. The Rogues, the Uzrug. Honestly, I'm actually kind of digging it. The more that I think about it,
sorry.
The things I'm thinking, like Sphinx Ambassador, Ebony,
Sphinx Ambassador.
Sphinx Ambassador.
Are you not with that?
I mean, there's
so many Sphinxes that actually want to be in that deck now.
Ebony, the 3-mana 1/1 that when it attacks, you lose half your life, but if it deals damage, they lose half their life.
Evan Blade Reaper.
Yeah. You might lose half your life, but they're losing half their life twice.
You know what?
Ooh. Yeah.
All right, we're gonna move on to another card. This one,
you know way more about it than I do, apparently.
I do.
I've been sitting on Theorem, so...
I've been crushing the story synopsis of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. It was fun. This whole set is like... this set's not meant to win your heart. It's meant to be fun.
Yeah, we're talking about Jace Reawakened here, who is looking kind of sexy. Kind of Clive Barker-ish.
Well, yeah, and like I assume because this is kind of an interesting story note, maybe I should just let you... dig through the story, otherwise it's kind of like a spoiler to talk about why this art is the way it is.
Well, I'll tell you what, on camera right now, because I don't know jack shit, you should just tell me and I'll tell you what my theory was.
Okay, so one of the cool things, the like a little bit of a reveal throughout the story, was that as the episodes were coming out, they generated a little bit of discomfort and kind of pissed people off because they were like, because Ashiok is in the story, right? Mm-hmm. Ashiok is... part of this whole heist, blah blah blah, and people are like, A, why the fuck is Ashiok there? B, why is Ashiok hiring people to do anything? C, why is Ashiok using mental mind magic in the way that they are? It was like people were like, you're writing Ashiok like shit, you guys don't know who Ashiok is, right? And then it turns out this whole frigging time, big reveal, Ashiok was never there. Jace was just like shrouding himself in an illusion as if he was Ashiok, because all the other characters involved in the story were most feared that character. It was like a way that Jace was essentially manipulating everybody else to help him get to this into the vault and to get this prized thing, right? So like he eventually does reveal the illusion that it was never Ashjok at all. So Jace reawakened the borderless edition shows sort of like Jace and Ashjok half and half. And that's like Ashjok's technically not even really in the story. It is actually Jace the whole time. Big reveal.
I wonder,
it was Pickle Rick the whole time.
Guys. Pickle Rick the whole time. You know, I wonder if Ashjok's could be either pissed off or happy about that in the future. So my theorem had something to do with Bloomborough, because we, if you've seen Spoils, Jace is in Bloomborough. Very excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
He's disguised as a little foxling.
He's disguised. Okay, so.
So I thought maybe there was some this, like, weird. Jace is. Now, and I have not read any. I've only just recently caught up in the story involving the invasion of Phyrexia. So that, like, you know, the Phyrexian invasion. So, like, the world, the Oath, Omen Pass opening the fuck up. So I've been catching up with a lot of that. But aside from that, I've just decided to kind of keep a lot of this neutral. Because of so much information is being thrown out there with magic, I'm keeping the process as organic and to my ADHD needs as possible, because I do kind of have a goldfish memory sometimes, and if it wasn't for magic, I probably, anyways, long story short, so I was convinced that it had something to do with him kind of being like a rebel jumping around the multiverse, and there was some kind of weird conflux where they connected or whatever, and I theorized that either Ashjok was able to do some things to Jace, or maybe vice versa, and because everything's being, like, literally popping off, like, there's some weird Eldrazi conjecture going on, which I think is a conversation to be had with when Brando's here. But, yeah, I thought there was just some weird multidimensional things happening to our planeswalkers who still had their spark. And,
yeah, so this does reveal that Jace does still have a spark, because he still is a planeswalker. He's still printed as a legendary planeswalker card. Now, the cool thing about the story is that the illusion that dropped the Ashjok facade was not the only illusion. Apparently, he's also trying very hard to keep up another illusion to look like he once did, because he's still horribly scarred and screwed up from being screwed up by the Phyrexians. He's in rough shape.
That makes sense.
But he does have a very... He has blue so in his cost, like, so very vain.
He's
very
Deadpool
vain.
Deadpool hot then?
He's exactly. Oh. There was people that were like, yo, is this the new magic, like, MTG Deadpool?
No more Swole Jace, Crush Boy.
Anyway, we should talk about the card. We've got it up,
honestly,
on screen.
I wanted to point out, I've not seen Plotted before. What is this Plotted?
Oh, okay, I guess
Plotted's kind of boring.
Do you remember... hi, I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from such films as Fortell. Plot, I can tell you, it's basically... You know how Fortell, you could pay the Fortell cost to put it in exile, and then you could basically get it on discount later?
Okay, yeah.
Like, Fortell was a mechanic where you could pay half now, half later.
Yeah, you'd pay the two, and then the two wasn't paid for the next.
So Plot is very, very much like that. The Plot cost is most common the same mana cost. But you can pay for the... Like, let's say you have two extra mana this turn. You can plot the card as a sorcery, put it into Plot armor. You can put the Plot card into exile.
Okay.
As a sorcery.
It. Yeah.
And then you can only cast it on another turn. You can't cast it that turn.
Right.
You can cast it on a future turn for free. At sorcery speed.
Gotcha.
So it's a layaway. It's like taking it to the pawn shop. It's hilarious. But
I can't afford their spell right now. I'm just going to put it on layaway.
I can't afford shit.
So that's basically the gist of Plot. Here, bring Jace back up so that we can finish talking about the card.
Sorry. You know what? I like that. It gives a new because for Fortell you couldn't play it on that turn when you put it into exile as well.
Wait, no,
you
had
to wait.
Did you have to wait?
Yeah, you got to wait until it's at least somebody else's turn.
Oh, okay.
And so you can't play it on the turn that you put it into Fortell.
Interesting.
And so with that,
play it on a later turn.
Yeah, exactly.
Plot to me is kind of like boring. I think it said sorcery speed. I was looking for
it. You want to know what the cool thing about the sorcery speed thing is? I know we're talking about Jace right now, but there's an Aven. I'll bring it up on my computer over here. Thunder Junction Aven. This is a white card. It's called Aven Interrupter.
Oh yeah.
Now, I want to talk about this. I'll just briefly interject here.
This card
Aven Interrupter is one white creature bird rogue. Yeah. Flash flying 2/2. When Aven Interrupter enters the battlefield, exile target spell. It becomes Plotted. Spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile cost 2 more to cast. So this is a little bit like Elite Spellbinder, the kind of card that will, like, it'll interact with an opponent's spell on the stack and then make it more expensive later. But I want to talk about how fucking dope this card is against a counterspell.
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
plays a counterspell, you go Aven Interrupter. No, put that in exile. You can only cast that counterspell at sorcery speed. Thanks, bud. That the counterspell's gone forever, right?
That kind of sounds really
it's
cool.
It's a mono white counterspell. It's a three mana flash flying mono white counterspell. It's insane. It's wonderful. Aven Interrupter is going to be a very good. It's currently it's only $8 in the
It's going in my
pre-order.
Stacks deck. I gotta get that now.
It's a good card.
It jumps up.
It's a good card. So yeah, let's go back to talking about Jace. Jace Reawakened.
Yeah, it's plus one. So yeah, no, here's a big thing about it too that I thought was puzzling, but it also makes sense because why not restrict its mana cost a little bit? It costs blue at two mana, but you can't cast a spell during your first, second, or third go fuck yourself turns.
Well, yeah, so there's only ever been one card with this text, right? It was the
Angel. Yeah,
Sarah something.
It was an
angel.
It was a two drop angel that was a 3/3 flyer, and you couldn't play it on your first or second turn.
Yeah, for second or third, I think.
Was it third?
Yeah, I used to have it in like the little picture frame thing behind. Anyway, this is the second card that's like done this. Now, if that text wasn't there, this card would be nuts, right? It with it being there, I don't know how impactful.
You know what?
This card's going to be.
As far as I'm concerned, that plus one for plotting card, I mean, it's mana value 3 or less, which is, that's the only downside for me on that, because that really hampers it.
With two plus abilities, that's why.
You also have to think about the fact that whatever you plot, you're restricting to sorcery speed. So you can't plot instant speed spells because you lock them into the jail and they can never be cast.
And I was when I first thought about the plotted, I was like, you know what? That's just a better suspend with because you don't have to. You don't have to wait turns until that suspend cost goes down. It's gonna it's gonna be
suspend,
spent on your upkeep.
Suspend is
or you can.
Free?
I mean, actually, suspend you have to cast it when it's on your upkeep for this.
Yeah, you can't.
You cast it whenever you choose on your turn.
And I will say the reason in this set, the set design, especially like in the limited environment of plotting, is let's say I want to spend 3 and a red on this card to plot it right now, but that card gets a buff when you play your second or third spell in a turn, right? So then you wait, and then next turn you cast it for free and have all your mana to open to then enable its ability to trigger it, right?
I mean,
so that's what they've designed this
for
around.
This?
I'm seeing this right now. I'm making this into an Oathbreaker.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Honestly, for this, for Storm, it's going to be absolutely nutty.
Yeah, for Oathbreakers, it gives you draw and you can discard, so there's a bunch of fun shenanigans with things in your graveyard you can always work around. It's at the plus one as you may exile. Obviously, you can plot. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really read the card too much, right?
Well,
there's two plus ones. Yeah. Well, first plus one, draw a card, then discard a card. It's a looter. It's Merfolk Looter. The second one is you may exile an online card with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. So, for the thing that bothers me about this is for a card that costs blue, you want to be playing instant speed spells, correct? Right? And this does not work with instant speed spells whatsoever. If you plot an instant speed spell, you have to then play it as sorcery.
Yeah, cantrips to just get that. It doesn't matter what it is. If you want to trigger things for being cast from exile, this is one way to do it, especially at
I'd love
CLC.
To see. I'd love to see how someone would build this. And then, of course, every planeswalker comes with their big Crackerjack ultimate, right? Until end of turn, it's a minus 6 ability. Until end of turn, whenever you cast a spell, copy it. Which, I mean, that's a crazy one. You may choose new targets for the copy. It's whenever you cast a spell, copy it. That's a crazy infinite, ultimate. It's wonderful.
What is that? That's a Locust God flavor card again. What is that again? Swarm of Locusts?
Swarm
Intelligence.
Swarm Intelligence.
Yeah, that's the one.
But that was for instance and sorceries. This is whenever you
cast
a
spell. Oh!
Right? Jace has an incredibly good ultimate.
Oh, wow.
But I don't understand. Like,
I mean,
if you pop that ultimate, you should be winning the game that turn. You pop the ultimate, the only way you would be minus sixing is because you're set up to be like, I'm sorry guys, it's over. I've won the game.
I mean, it's also super easy because it's only 3
for
the loyalty.
I guess it'd have to be, I don't want to make this Oathbreaker anymore. That's way too many cards.
I mean, for 3 for a loyalty and then the 6, I mean, all you need to do, you have it come in, Deep Glow Skate, bounce it, or Deep Glow Skate, you have it double the counters on it. Now you can ult it immediately.
Yeah. I wonder if Proliferate would help with this too. My thought right away was just
absolutely literally Planeswalker's best friend.
I will tell you that I know that this one spell it lives rent free in my mind for the end of time. But The minute I read that minus six, I was like, ooh, approach of the second sun, approach of the second sun. And then it just digs to it. It just digs to it, right? But this is not, like, that would be a Pioneer or Modern or not standard, right? Amonkhet is way out of standard. So Pioneer, I don't know. Pioneer's so ruthless and fast. I don't know if this card is... The thing is, you can't do any of this until you get him out and uptick him for multiple turns. You can't cast him until turn four.
Yeah, you can't cast until turn four, and yeah, if you're going to be plotting anything at all, you know what it is? You're plotting contingencies, because you're not expecting Jace at two mana to survive, probably, especially if you had to wait until turn four. People have been preparing. So I think to be able to plot an interesting response, recovery spell, whatever it is, like return, what I'm thinking is, especially with this deck, if you can win the game with any two cards being cast at the same time, it's probably... And unfortunately, you're restricted as an Oathbreaker, at least. You're within blue artifacts. What would do that?
I don't know. I'm willing to wait and see if somebody breaks this card or shows it to be good. But right now,
Windbeard. He breaks decks all the time.
Yep.
Can you please...
honestly, the way that I see this being played is, I don't think it's going to be as fast, for sure. But it's, but it is that... it's.
I think
plotting, plotting every turn, you throw something in there that you're going to be like, okay, so here's what I'm going to do for here, and just keep plotting things, keep throwing things into exile until you have that one turn that you're like, okay, now we're going to explode, and you just throw every single one of them. They might be coming out at sorcery speed, but you have far too many of them for anybody to handle with, and then.
Yeah.
And then you can storm off of that, because you don't have to pay, like, not paying the mana cost for that is the crazy part. And so you just keep plotting, and then storm off. Doesn't even matter how much mana you have.
I guess that's why the mana value 3 or less is in there, right? Because it doesn't want you getting... You can't just
expropriate
Ulamog and then cast it for free, right? Not that Ulamog is in standard, but Commander for sure. So I will say, we're like 40 minutes recording. You said you had like 24 cards you wanted to talk about. I think we've done like six.
I grabbed 24. We'll just
yeah, I guess we'll just pick the
we'll start with my favorite.
We
now
talked about Oko already, so we can skip that one, right?
We've talked about Oko. I don't think we've talked about its abilities.
We did. It was spoiled the last time a month ago.
Oh, really. Yeah, in our podcast. Yeah, we definitely spoiled that. Yeah. So I want to jump right to Quaalude Face number 2. Earth of Joe Frontier Mentor costs 2 cards. Colorless and Boros, so that's a red and a white if you don't know. Legendary creature, core advisor. Now, if you've seen some of the spoilers with the terrain of Thunder Junction, there is some crazy monolithic cacti doing some things. And I love that there is a core literally just living their best life, okay? Anyways, when Earth of Joe, Frontier Mentor, enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 red mercenary creature token with tap. Target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery. That's cool. It's fine. It's niche. Whatever. I don't give a shit about that. We were just talking about Panharmonicated abilities. Well, guess what? Whenever you activate an ability that targets a creature or a player, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. It's PDH legal. It only costs 4 mana.
Oh,
it's
this is an uncommon, so you could play this as a commander in Pauper Commander.
What the hell? Wizards, you gave me such a woody.
Cool. Mother of Runes?
Mother of Runes!
Oh, man, does that do some work there.
Target
creature gains protection from a color.
Mother can target herself.
That's nice.
And so you could have somebody say, oh, you know what? I'm going to do a Blasphemous Act, and Mother of Runes can then protect itself and something else.
Blasphemous Act, protection can't get around that. But
yeah. Protection brings all damage that would be done to 0.
It doesn't protect against destroy.
Yeah.
But it does... Blasphemous Act would be targeted damage, so it's a red spell causing 13 damage.
Right.
So Mother of Runes can protect against that.
Okay. That's useful.
Always remember that protection means DEBT.
I mean, this deck can get out of control, I think, because you can bounce her a few times, get something out there. There are far too many things that say target creature becomes power 2 or less becomes unblockable, and then you've just bounced her a bunch, make it unblockable, then tap all of your guys to buff the crap out of her, and throw in for the win.
She is one crazy looking bitch. She looks...
Oh yeah, the face.
It's the Quaalude Face. Now, bit of a backstory if you haven't seen some of our shorts. Quaalude Face is a joke of mine referring to the first Braids Cabal minion.
Yes, it will
now,
be on
you've
screen
seen
now.
The face, she high as fuck. Now, to compare the faces, Eartha Joe is the only other, and I'm sure there's a few other, but not for legendary creatures that I've come across, at least.
Just a psycho face.
Yeah, like, just psycho. Like, girl, all you doing is climbing up a cactus. Calm the fuck down. Like,
yeah, she looks like she's having a lot of fun. Have you ever climbed up a cactus on LSD?
She's been hypnotized by the process, and now all that matters is the cacti. Either way, super excited. I love the name. The flavors, especially for almost every commander in the set. Makes me just giddy. I just want to go nuts. In the frontier here.
Cool. And well, PDH, yeah, go ahead.
For PDH, fantastic. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of bounces in there. You continue.
No, I was just trying to push on to the next one. Just speed through some of these.
Oz, I want you to talk about this one because you know what? I think you would build this.
Idiot, the beguiler.
All right. So we've got four mana 4/4. So it's Esper. And is lifelink. Whenever an aura you control becomes attached to a non-land permanent you control with a mana value less than or equal to the aura's mana value, gain control of that permanent for as long as the aura is attached.
Now tell me.
Oh, that is so up my alley.
Yeah, I know it is.
I have questions because this says whenever an aura you control becomes attached to a non-land permanent opponent controls. Mm-hmm. So you can't mess with auras that are like standard auras, right? Most auras say enchant creature you control. There's not a lot of auras.
Actually,
it restricts it quite heavily, right? To go
there's
to
a lot. Defense,
no, there's
yeah.
Surprisingly.
Aren't those usually like bad things to put on those creatures?
I would actually vote most auras just say enchant target creature. And then enchanted creature gets this. So I think for the most part, auras have always been incredibly versatile. I've never seen an aura in which it said only a creature you control. On
there are very few that say on for a creature you control or for a permanent you control.
I think that is
the big...
The reason why they'd probably... sorry to interrupt. Yeah. They would include creature you control is to actually downpower it or depower it a little bit because, frankly, let's assume that the chant... If it's saying that you can only chant something you control, it's got to be big. Maybe juicy, maybe even game-changing.
But I haven't seen any of that. This is killing my computer. Okay, so Angelic Destiny is enchant creature. Enchant creature has +4/+4, has flying and first strike, is an angel in addition to its other types. When enchanted creature dies, return Angelic Destiny to its owner's hand. Wow, that's a good card.
Oh, holy. Yeah.
I don't have one of those. I would like one.
More cards that have that Rancor effect that when the creature dies, you just get it back. And for this, that's tasty.
Eldrazi conscription.
So this is amazing.
Perfection.
So what you do is with Ariat the Beguiler, I think what you would want is the best enchantments in the game for the best creatures on the board. And no matter what, you're enchanting something that isn't yours with something that is game changing. You're going to have a lot of fun with this. And you're going to make people cry.
One of the things, the big downdraw is that it has to be a higher mana cost than what the creature is. And so you got to make sure that...
Like Eldrazi Conscription?
Less than or equal to most things.
Right. Yeah. And so the first thought that I had was Spirit Link, which gives target creature lifelink. Which, giving a creature lifelink and then taking it, funny. But...
you have to be careful. That would get your Sarah's Ascent?
I would absolutely grab a Sarah's Ascent or something like that. But you got to find something that is going to get that mana cost a little bit higher because you got to be able to target the everything that's on the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Eldrazi's are expensive.
Zer players are going to get excited. I do believe this will work with Zer.
Absolutely.
I can see this pissing a lot of people off.
Yeah, I can see this pissing.
I can see myself pissing a lot of people off with this.
I think it's one of the most hated archetypes, period, is theft.
Yep.
Why, thank you.
I mean, I do too. I sacrifice it, though. I usually sacrifice them or keep them around.
We're outlaws now.
I like to keep shit.
It's mine now, saith Oz.
And you know what? That is amazingly powerful. And there's, blue just has plenty of enchant creatures that you just gain control of right to begin with, a treachery or anything like that.
It would be so savage to...
Ooh.
Like return Ooh. All or like all artifacts and enchantments to the battlefield with like a clause, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, you're looking around. On the stack, I'm going to enchant this creature with X enchantments and this with X enchantments and only this one with one because I can't meet the mana requirements. But guess what? Those three are mine, and you have the two that are just like, you know, just a macho man, just
the cream.
Ready to cream some butthole or whatever he said. I don't know. The man's insane.
I mean... When I first think about this as well, yeah, open the vaults. You could mill yourself.
Something.
Do an open the vaults and just take everybody's
trauma. Oh my god!
Wow!
This is reverse Bruno shenanigans. Traumatize yourself, half your deck.
Interesting.
And then open the vaults on it, or replenish, or anything like that.
You're
then
in big combo plays. That sounds fun.
And just take the whole board.
Dimir knows how to fill its graveyard up, right? Like,
oh yeah,
is the strongest it's ever been, right? Meow.
Cool.
So.
All right. Is there any other ones we're getting? I think we're
that is
49 minutes or something.
Yeah.
For
okay.
Us. Like,
well, we're
gonna actually for those listening, we're gonna do two episodes tonight because we just have so much shit to talk about, and we figured we'd do like mostly like chat about cards and Thunder Junction on one, and then we'll get into
tempo
the
for
rest
your
of
first
it.
Naiad brew. I really hope that you make Geirrid Mirror of the Wilds.
Yeah, I guess I've never made a Naya commander. Hey, mm-hmm. We got Geirrid. Well, all right. Shout out to the Commander Cookout podcast. They didn't call him Gearhead. Gearhead Mirror of the Wilds.
Geirrid Mirror of the Wilds.
He costs red, green, white, legendary creature, human shaman. 3/3 haste. Non-token creatures you control have... Oh, yeah, it's the... Okay, so non-token creatures you control have tap, create a token that's a copy of target token you control that entered the battlefield this turn. Wait, I didn't realize all your non-token creatures have the ability. I thought it was just him.
Mm-mm. Oh, this is Kiki Jiki on crack.
It's a kind of... Kiki Jiki is still stronger for its wording, but a non-token creatures you control have... Boof. So all you have to do is maybe make a copy of the right creature, and you can basically set up... Let's say you have Kiki Jiki on the battlefield. Now, let's say you have... Let's say Terror of the Peaks enter the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have five pre-existing creatures.
Oh, GGs.
Oh, done.
Exactly. And then you use Kiki Jiki. Then you create the one copy.
Yeah, you
and
use
then...
Kiki Jiki to create a token. Because this whole thing, this whole shtick works off of creating a token copy of a creature.
Twin Flame.
And then
that,
copying all of that
so
token.
You need your setup. But at 3 mana with haste, non-token creatures. So he does it himself effectively, immediately with haste.
This is so minimal setup
for this. The fact that there is
it's green. Competitive.
The fact that there's green in this color, there's you got your Tooth and Nail and your what's the other one that if you take damage or something you sacrifice it
Defense of the Heart.
Defense of the Heart, yeah. And then you get to tutor for two creatures, right? The ones where you get to tutor for two creatures is basically GG's. You grab Kiki Jiki, you grab the other thing, and you go off.
Flame Conjuring or whatever, it's like whenever a non-token creature you control enters the battlefield, pay red, any of that kind of stuff.
I mean,
so
whenever your token dies or anything like that, like because it's only... these tokens don't go away. Oh my god.
Yeah, they don't go away.
No,
and
they don't.
Here's another thing too. So what's that one artifact that's whenever a creature dies, you can exile it onto this thing and then you can pay whatever mana to summon a copy of it. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine stealing image here?
Well, I don't know.
So it's basically it's an imprint. It's an imprint artifact from way back in the day. So whenever a non-token creature would die, you exile that onto this artifact, and then you pay the mana to summon it again as a copy or whatever.
Yes,
and it's a target.
I've played against this card many times.
And
I can't remember.
It's amazing as somewhat targeted removal, like control. Who
is it? Mimic Vat.
Mimic Vat, thank you very, very much.
Right.
So Mimic Vat basically can be a bit of a control state, like, you know, oh, I really like that creature. It doesn't work in commanders, unfortunately. But any other creature that has juice, like, can you imagine Critter Hoof Behemoth? It's like, oh, yeah, okay, it died, and then you do get to do shit because of a, you know, like a destroy target creature spell. You exile it onto your own Mimic Vat, and now you have the potential to make five Critter Hoofs. Wouldn't that just be...
Ah!
I haven't even seen that. I've seen it... I've heard of it in Essex decks, but no.
I definitely had played a Simic deck that did a Rite of Replication onto a Crater Hoof Behemoth. That is some beautiful stuff right there. But,
a lot of math.
Oh boy.
Is everything okay at home?
Who hurt you?
I mean, let's not talk about that right now. But but with that, just... The fact that you get to keep the tokens is beyond me.
And it's exponential because every No, I guess the tokens that you create won't be able to tap. But any of the regular cards that you put in your deck that you put on the battlefield, creature-wise, also just have this ability. So, yeah. Like,
I'm just thinking about untapping your creatures. You could have... it because there's... there's a quest that whenever you tap a creature, you put a counter on it. It's a green quest. And then on everybody's upkeep, you untap all of your creatures. Two mana for it.
Quest?
Yeah. I put a quest counter on it every time.
Like a saga?
Or
a battle?
It's more so like Beastmaster's Ascension.
Yes.
So when you attack with a creature, then you put a counter onto it, and then when you get 7, it gets +5/+5. For this one, you just need 4 counters on it. I'll just pull it up here. I'll go grab it right now because
he's got it in hand.
I've got it here.
All right.
And this thing is
perfect segue.
Geared is definitely it's gonna be strong, and I know there's definitely people in our playgroup that wanna put this together, right?
I mean, Gavin was all like, "Dupes!"
Awakening or anything like that, a Seedborn Muse, all for untapping your creatures and then just copying because they don't go away.
So, does that mean we finally found a way to break Seedborn Muse?
Oh.
Finally. Finally, a new way to break.
Man.
Took me a long time.
I've been waiting for that one for a long time.
She don't need help. What?
Well, so you're searching for this card. You got this. Is this the Balrog deck?
No, this is actually Beamtown Bullies because I like untapping my stuff.
Oh my
and
God. Excuse me, everyone. I'm so sorry.
I mean, an awakening, even untapping, just
untapping.
Being able to untap all of your creatures on somebody else's turn is going to make this thing go absolutely nutty.
Yeah, I'm excited because Geared seems like it's it sits well. It I've heard that there is a list developing for Geared for CEDH that will be really quick and quick and painless. But I feel like for the way that most of our friends are going to build it, it'll be fun to play against. I think it'll be terrifying. It'll be fun to play against.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So this one I'm really excited about. The Gitrog continues to be greater than the Hypnotoad. Okay. It's the meta behind this card is just insane. I love it. The Ravenous Ride, the Gitrog Ravenous Ride, legendary creature, frog horror mount. Okay.
Yeah.
Big wording here.
Yeah.
Trample haste.
We talk about the saddle.
Yeah, whenever the Gitrog Ravenous Ride deals combat damage to a player, you may sacrifice a creature that saddled it this turn. If you do, draw X cards and put up to X land cards from your hand on the battlefield tapped, where X is the sacrificed creature's power. I don't know why I did transatlantic, but here we are. Saddle one.
I loved it. Saddle one. So saddle, let's talk about this.
The lowest to the ground level of a quip on a creature.
Yeah, you can
saddle
one. You can put whatever token you want. Just one, whatever. Saddle is like crew for vehicles. But it is
for living creatures, which I'm so happy we did.
Crew is like saddle at home, really, because I think saddle's just better.
Yo, saddle's infinitely.
Saddle is like, hey, you can mount up if you want, but if you don't want to, let's go. It's still a creature. It's still a creature every turn. So the Gitrog is still a creature no matter what. And actually, 95% of the words on this card don't matter unless you saddle it.
Mm-hmm.
If you saddle it, then all these other things happen. If not, it's just a 6/5 trample haste.
6/5 trample haste, though, at 5
for
mana.
For 5, yeah,
at
it's not
five.
Bad.
Tasteful.
You know what I want to know, though? Is this not a frog? Thunder Junction has got to be the driest ass place I've ever seen. How is he keeping moisturized? That's an amphibious creature.
Could be a toad. I mean, it does say frog right on there.
You know
it's
what?
Hard to...
He's probably so moist, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
That is probably a wet ride.
Ripping people to shreds, just keeping them salty. And,
I mean, Thalia...
And...
When it rains in the desert, man,
Thalia
it rains.
Had the nerve to jump on that back. I'm sure he's not that slippery.
Oh, that's another fun part of the story is Rakdos. Do you remember in War of the Spark when Gideon rode Rakdos and Rakdos was all
pissed?
Yeah,
the last time that ever happened.
The last time.
Yeah,
I think he says that twice in the story for this. Two people ride him and he's
was
so mad
about it. Somebody like Tiny goes
about it.
I'm trying to remember.
I can't even remember, but he definitely
somebody
has two people ride him. He's like,
that.
I will not do this again. And then he does it again in the same story.
This
is so demeaning.
We're gonna jump
let's talk about Rakdos.
We're going to jump right to us
okay.
Carry that away.
Let's do it. All right, so we got Rakdos, the muscle. Beauty. And so we got two black, one red, two for a flying trample when you and a 6/5. So seems like they like to keep it there. And so whenever you sacrifice another creature, exile cards equal to its mana value from the top of your top of target player's library until your next turn. Until your next end step, you may play those cards, and mana at mana of any type can be spent to cast those spells. So you got to some theft going on there.
Impulsive then, draw off of whoever's deck you want.
And
right?
And I mean, it's not over yet. Sacrifice another creature. Rakdos Muscle gains indestructible until end of turn.
Yeah.
Tap it. Activates only once per turn.
Now,
so
I don't think Wizards thinks or believes that Rakdos likes to read too much. I know he's a very, very old, omniscient creature, but there's never been a lot of flavor text on any Rakdos card, but there is script on this bitch.
Oh yeah, he's got God. A lot of words. From what I've heard on other podcasts, Rakdos is incredibly powerful and incredibly feared, and even the cult of Rakdos is so fucking scared of him that they essentially, like, they just try to keep him really well fed so that he's tired and really well entertained, because if he's not entertained, then he starts killing everybody. So they're like constantly trying to like keep him entertained and satiated. That's why like he's
put things into the meat grinder just to make sure that he's okay.
Yeah, just basically trying to keep him full so he's lazy, and like, because he's just, when he's hungry or he's unentertained, everybody gets their ass kicked. So I'm curious, like, here he is on Thunder Junction, just being a
dick.
Honestly, an amazing not, right? sack outlet.
Yeah. So this is notably a creature card that it's a body. It's a 5-mana 6/5 flample. My favorite collection of words. Like, flying trample is you're gonna kill people. But it also has the coveted sacrifice another creature text with no cost.
Yeah.
So you can sack an entire board, right? You can steal everybody's stuff with Mob Rule or whatever it is, and then just end a turn. They're all gone.
Oh, absolutely. I just saw an infinite combo with this.
Oh, wait. Sorry, activate only once each turn.
No. I'm seeing another infinite combo, though. Phyrexian, yeah, I know. That's amazing. But Phyrexian Altar with Gravecrawler, that's infinite. You just you exile everyone's library at one.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Because it's whenever you sacrifice another creature. It's not with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you need a zombie.
Oh, wait. Hold on a second. Exile cards equal to its mana value.
Yep. All you need is one infinite loop and go.
So you just exile everyone else's library and then they can't untap.
Yep. Squee with some other weird old wall. I mean, you don't get food chain with Squee in this color, but you with Squee, being able to cast him from graveyard from exile with some kind of, like, I don't know, pitiless plunder and some other weird kind of loop going on, I'm sure it would work. But otherwise, I'd just say if you can opt for it and you want to go competitive with Rakdos the Muscle, you're going to go for that Gravecrawler with another zombie in play and sack trigger. Go just kill everyone and exile.
Is Gravecrawler just one to cast?
Yep.
And then you get one mana from sacking?
Yeah, you just need a zombie. Any other zombie on your board state and go back and forth from the graveyard.
So you need another piece of that combo.
Yep. So it's like 3 for 2.
Huh.
But still, honestly, you would literally exile everyone's libraries. That's pretty cool. I do. I plan on building this. He's also a mercenary, and I've always had a big crush on Rakdos. So,
I mean, that extra protection on top of that is nothing to scoff at.
I'm going to hand this one away to you there, Tampo.
You're going
to
give me Kellen the Kid?
Kellen the Kid.
We're getting
AKA
about an hour into this.
Makes me wet.
So, because I want to do two episodes, we should probably maybe end on this one?
I think so.
Okay, we're going to talk about Kellen the Kid. This is a Bant. Green, white, and blue. 3 pips. 3 mana. There's a lot of 3-pip 3/3s in the different wedges.
Also, 5 mana 6/5?
Yeah, I guess
with
they're all...
two keywords? I mean...
Right, this one has Flying Lifelink. Was Kellen... Wait.
Kellen's always been low CMC.
Kellen is this boy here. Is he not? He's Oko's son.
Kellen has largely always had red in him, too, I do believe. So this is the first time where he was all like...
He's only ever been in one set, right? He was in Lost Caverns of Ixalan, and he was originally from Wilds of Eldraine.
He's from Eldraine, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Okusano. He's trying to find it. Up until the set, he's been trying to find his father. That's been in the story. He just wants to meet.
Yeah.
daddy issues out there.
Spoiler alert. Right. He finds his dad.
He finds his dad.
And also, spoiler alert, his dad's a dick. Not a good dad.
His dad's probably a slut, too. That hasn't been embellished yet, but...
Daddy took off for cigarettes and never came back.
Yeah, he basically is. Oko is the I left for cigarettes of MTG. Although, I don't know. Shout out to Lorebound Legends podcast, Daniel from Mid of the 99. They've been talking about the early Magic novels and stuff. Terrible, terrible people those characters were. They were horrible. Like the original Planeswalkers, like the original novels.
Urza's an asshole. It always has been.
Even before that, we're talking like...
Windgrace, always a dick. Yeah. Fraley's fantastic to talk with, I'm sure.
Who was it? The guy, the five-color guy that creates the Black Lotus token.
Oh, Garth one.
Garth and stuff. Like, they're just terrible people. Terrible, terrible people. And you know what?
Power corrupts absolutely. Fuck
honestly,
you, Brandon,
like,
don't you dare argue me on that one.
writing Oko as a bad person, I sure, yeah. He's like, he's a villain.
Yeah, he's hot, definitely... but that's just...
Anyway, I'll read this card. So it is a human fairy rogue flying lifelink 3/3. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, you may cast a permanent spell with equal or lesser mana value from your hand without paying its mana cost. Plot. If you don't, you may put a land card from your hand on the battlefield. So, yeah, whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, this card works with the main set mechanic plot very well, right? You pay for the spell on one turn, then next turn with Kellen on board, you plot the card, or you cast the card for free, and then get to cast another spell from your hand for free, equal or lesser mana, and then you still get to use your mana for something else. So, like, it seems explosive. It just, everything has to line up, I guess.
I mean, honestly, I don't think it's that going to be that hard
honestly,
to line up.
Yeah. It's going to be easy. Suspend anything at all. Again, if it's not from hand, you're
there's
breaking
suspend,
the game.
Suspend, foretell, now there's plotting. Now there, and I mean, Vega already came out with it, and it's strong. Like, just being able to draw cards when you cast something
foretell.
Out of...
Yeah, they made the commander for Bont in Bont colors for anything being cast from exile.
Yeah, and the cool thing
is
you get your refund no matter what, right? Like if
flying
you're like,
lifelink too.
I don't,
goddamn.
Yeah. Hold on. Like if you don't spend the if you don't want to cast the card because it's not the right time, you still get the put the land from your hand on the battlefield. It is
you
is pretty
never
strong.
Get,
I think this is CDH.
Is
yeah,
this
you never get
Chulain?
No value. It's just value.
Yeah. Does it feel sort
yeah.
of Chulain to me or Cullen?
Think,
whatever you. However.
I think it's Thrasios. I think yeah. it's very Thrasios. Or anything that allows you to... God, if you don't, you may put a land. So, not quite Scry. With Thrasios, it's Scry. You can't go infinite and play your whole deck. But whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than a hand, you can still just... I'm sure you can have insane turns. Not as strong remotely, actually, now that I'm really thinking about it, as Thrasios. But to be able to just... have your deck on board state with infinite mana or whatever your deck can provide for those combos to get there if you go burr. Obviously, you can't contend with that. But whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, what is that? So that's foretell, that's plot, that's impulse draw, I guess.
Suspend.
Junk tokens,
suspend.
I guess.
Oh, impulse draw, yeah.
Like, so you don't, yeah, well, you get junk red. Tokens, you get junk, well, you get junk tokens at least to mess around with.
Yeah.
Anything, a Lundo, he fits these, so you can throw a Lundo into this mix. Anything at all that wants to see that cast from exile that has been popularized recently, unfortunately.
Anywhere other
right.
than your hand? I mean, even flashback.
And they wanted to do this for the sake of, I bet, the predominancy of red in impulse draw, so.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. My favorite part is the fact that he's also now joined up with the Halo universe, and he seems to be holding a, what is it called?
The energy sword?
Yeah, the energy sword. It looks like on the card he's holding a friggin' Halo energy sword. I love it.
The Covenant will be coming for him.
Yeah.
No, oh, but I mean, just being able to play things for free, is honestly my favorite mechanic, other than stealing. But
he's a thief.
This always will get you value, and three mana for a 3/3 flying.
Yeah,
and lifelink. This
link.
Is survival. Like, you're gonna survive with this. It's gonna run away with the game if you don't. This is a competitive.
God, he's so
I would throw
man.
It.
Can't get over that.
Well,
they gotta stop with the sex
up,
appeal of these characters.
There was another Kellen card, right? Kel and MTG. I want to know.
There
was
the.
What he looked like. Yeah, it was the Boros card that
yep.
had the search ability.
Hell, I
he
forgot about
so
adventures as well.
Yeah, Adventures are also from Exile.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's so many.
Can I mean,
Casting from Your Grave, too?
I'm going to have two versions of this
Look,
deck.
Does this guy...
I mean, okay, I Lear. Guess... Lear in this, all your spells get flashback,
oh,
and now it's...
Yeah.
And spells can't be counted either.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, I just exchanged that
So
in.
It looks like he's aged a little bit, right? He's grown up a bit. Kellan the Fabled be on screen right now. He looks quite young.
I don't think the artists work together that way, unfortunately. If you ever look at like every single Chandra card in print, or they're very rarely, unfortunately, sometimes do all of them look the same. Like, I don't know, Nahiri. Nahiri just kind of kept getting more crazy over the years, you know? Liliana has had, I think, the most amount of loosely agreed upon kind of appearances, but even then, like, man, there's... Like, you can see the one that just came out with Dominaria United. Professor Onyx does not look anything...
Oh, you want to see a good one. And on screen here, we got the original version of Chromium, and then we got Chromium the Mutable. These two cards are
not...
Corporate says this is the same person.
And guess what? Stained glass. Just because. It's beautiful. Love the stained glass one.
Anyway, we're planning on recording a couple episodes tonight, so we should just put a big stamp on this one.
That is... These sneak peeks, I'm sure a lot of people have already been maybe watching this, already exposed, but you know what, we're excited about them. Can't not provide this, especially for you, so
yeah.
Well, I can't tell you how excited I am for this set.
It's gonna be a good time.
It's gonna be nothing but rooting, tooting, wonderful gun shooting. Oh boy.
I'll steal your child in the night like a dingo. Wait, what else?
I mean, a dingo ain't my baby.
Sleeping. Oh, the baby's sleeping, I guess.
Yeah, you're not my dad.
No dingo jokes about.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna send this one off. Thank you so much for listening. Appreciate you guys so much. Everybody that makes it to the end of every episode, you're the real ones. We appreciate everything, all the time. If you could do anything that helps us, is like when these videos come out on YouTube and everything, drop a comment. It lights a flame on the algorithm and makes people want to watch it. You could also throw it in your browser and watch it on 0.25x speed all throughout the week and just rack up our watch hours. That would be sweet. thank you, Brady, and thank you, Oz.
It was a pleasure.
As always.
And we love you guys for being here, and thank you for sticking around.
Yeah. I'm going to send you out on some hillbilly music on this one. So, we'll see you in the part two of the episode that we're going to record momentarily. But I'm going to take a piss. We'll see you later.
Bye. Later, lovelies.
Bye.
Thank you.